Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome to talk to KER Politics. Got an awful lot of things going on in America this particular week, all culminated today. Today, Roe v. Wade was announced it was overturned, number one, on the federal level. You have to understand that it was overturned on the federal level. 26 states still do not allow abortions, however, that's an important thing to realize. Going on in the financial markets continue to bounce back a little bit today, and that's very positive. We're going to be talking about that. Not sure what Biden is doing, but Jimmy has his ear to the ground, and he's going to let us know exactly what Biden is handling all of this stuff. You know, there is so much pollen out here, I can't even talk. Jimmy, talk about whatever you want first. You're on, sir.
Okay, so let's go ahead and start with the biggest issue and the one that's inflaming political rhetoric, certainly on the left, and that's the Roe v. Wade situation. So this morning, the Supreme Court announced on a Friday, a very unusual announcement, the overturning of Roe v. Wade. It basically a 6-3 opinion that supported the Missouri law the Mississippi law that allowed that basically stopped abortions at a very, very early point, and said, hey, look, in a 5-4 decision, that's Roberts dissenting, Roe v. Wade was unconstitutional. And so we've got a kind of a, in both cases, the Supreme Court basically overturned the standing precedent that the U.S., the federal government, could dictate whether or not a woman could destroy a child in the womb at an early age. But what is interesting about this, first of all, of course, that's because they know they're following a democratic process that allows controversial decisions out on Friday so that hopefully it fades over the weekend. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to be the case. They also made this decision in a split way where the John Roberts, actually dissented on overturning Roe v. Wade, giving the 5-4 decision. And that shows that he's basically succumbing to the political pressures.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And really, because there's no question that the Roe v. Wade decision, the initial Roe v. Wade decision, was unconstitutional. The Constitution did not give the power for an abortion. All these responsibilities go to the states. And remember, the decision here just gives those responsibilities to the states to make the decision. It does not give it to the federal government. And
correct.
That's an important distinction. However, this is a political motivator for the left. And just the unfortunate reality is that they are using this to mobilize their base in a very down year where it looks like, you know, there's a lot of dissatisfaction with what's happening in the United States with the immigration, with inflation, the economy, with overseas foreign affairs, and of course with general quality of life diminishing because of all these factors. They needed something to mobilize their base. And unfortunately, you're seeing that with senior political leaders, Nancy Pelosi, and numerous coming out today and hammering the decision, trying to fire up and motivate the young, people that really are inconsistent, that fail to understand what the legal precedent is here, and simultaneously undermining the credibility of the Supreme Court. And unfortunately, I think John Roberts falls into that category as Chief Justice by kind of causing this split decision here to make it look more separate. And unfortunately, we're going to see a lot of trouble over the next few weeks, possibly months, because of these inflammatory rhetoric remarks by the political leadership of the Democratic Party and progressives.
Well, the thing that I'd like you to explain to me and explain to our listeners, because I'm sure they don't understand it either, Nancy Pelosi threw venomous teeth this morning on C-SPAN, said you can blame Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump specifically. Our country is going down, down, down because of those two guys. What does Trump have to do with it?
Well, I think indirectly what she's saying is because Mitch McConnell did not allow a vote on Merrick Garland at the end of the Obama administration to fill the open Supreme Court seat after Justice Samuel Alito died.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the Supreme Court, very famous Supreme Court justice, is Chief Justice.
Right.
Or it was one of the justices. He passed away. So Garland was withheld a vote. And then, of course, Trump was over with Ginsburg's death and retirement from Anthony Kennedy, was able to appoint three Supreme Court justices. So that's the argument right now Justice Scalia's untimely death in 2016. That's the justification for blaming them, but at the same time, what they're doing is undermining the legitimacy of the Supreme Court, and they're ignoring the fact that, you know, Trump won that election, and of course they're arguing that, hey, elections count, and that's what they're pushing forward right now. So I think it's probably, in my view, a bad long-term political strategy, but it is inflaming activists on the left, and you're going to see some violence over it.
Well, unfortunately, the violence that's occurred so far has been very, very minor. At least I'm away from my sources right now, obviously, because you and I are recording. But I haven't seen any major riotous illegal disturbances in the United States yet because of the Roe v. Wade decision, Jim.
Well, we know that when the draft decision a couple of months ago was leaked, there was actually quite a few activities, and there has been since that time. There's been attacks on churches. There's been burning of Christian centers that support protecting women from abortion or helping them get through those issues without taking abortion. There's been the threat to Justice Kavanaugh, the individual that was arrested for attempting to murder him.
Right.
So we know that's before the actual decision was released. So we can expect some of these organizations have actually stated they're going to do a night of rage. We can expect, and Homeland Security is actually warning churches and Catholic institutions and Christian centers that there is a high probability of violence. And, you know, what they did in 2020, what the same activists did with the George Floyd type riots and the BLM and the Antifa type riots, you're going to see the mobilization of those groups attempting to do the same thing that they did 2 years ago that basically burned down over 200 cities, cost a couple of billion dollars damage. And I expect that they're going to attempt to mobilize their group, their base because of that. I think at this point, my prediction is that's going to backfire because people are pretty fed up with every other aspect of the economy, with the way this administration is handling many issues. And you see this rhetoric from our Democratic progressive leaders. I think a lot of people in the middle, especially Hispanics, are just done with it.
Well, I got to tell you, I would have to say that burning down churches, violence towards religious institutions, non-secular institutions, to be perfectly accurate, I think is the wrong thing to do. We as conservatives are stressing, in my neck of the woods anyway, beat this at the ballot box. Take issues that we disagree with, take them to the ballot box. That way there's no violence, and that way, assuming there's no shenanigans in the voting process, we get things accomplished in a non-violent manner. I hope and pray, Jim, I have to tell you that is what happens in this case. The abortion issue is very, very volatile, but let's not make it more dangerous by killing or destroying private property. Ladies and gentlemen, time for a commercial break. Stick around, I'm going to be right back.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Okay, welcome back in the short segment before the top of the hour news. We're going to talk about a little bit about what Joe Biden and the Biden administration is going to do to solve problems in the United States. His solution that came across the wire services yesterday was to allow the federal government to administer the election system. I don't like that. How about you, Jim?
Yeah, and I think, so there's a fantastic article that Molly Hemingway of The Federalist has written, and I think people should really take a look at that article that discusses what the Biden administration is doing right now to mobilize executive agencies within the administration to increase voter registration, and primarily focusing them on areas and individuals and people in that would likely increase Democratic outreach. So the article, which I think it's incredibly important to understand, highlights that the Biden administration has passed sent an executive order out to all agencies to how to mobilize people to get out the vote.
Right.
And what they've done is they've crossed the border a little bit between federal influence in elections and, of course, local control of elections. And how they've done that is they've ordered agencies to take action that would increase voter turnout, and specifically in areas where that they could get more Democratic voters. So let me give you a couple of examples. The Department of Labor has issued orders to their job centers to get out the vote. And of course that, Department of Labor funding going to the job centers to get out the vote, that could very specifically target labor unions and labor activists and people without employment at the time in order to influence potentially gain more Democratic votes. In the Medicare and Medicaid agency and their centers around the country, they've given resources and said they can use resources for get out the vote. Once again, another very specific targeted group. The Housing and Urban Development Agency is using funding for voter registration, and these are primarily in HUD areas that are of lower income and people, again, likely to vote Democratic. And the Department of Education has sent out a letter to colleges to, quote, their friends and other organizations in order to use federal work study funds for those colleges and universities to use federal work study funds in order to maximize voter registration. Again, targeting the youth and people that would be more inclined to vote Democratic. These things are all undermining basic principles and ethics between federal government influencing outcomes in elections and state responsibilities, and probably in question. But here's the kicker. Many members of Congress have been asking, what is going on, and provide information, and none of these agencies have responded. They're hoping to respond after the 2022 election. So once again, they're putting in place ways to increase their voter base through the executive action and other financial means of influencing the government. And of course, in many ways, we've seen them attempting to buy votes across the board in other areas like, forgiving school loans and things like that.
Jimmy, I want to give credit where credit is due, but I understand that you're now a pretty regular contributor to The Federalist, which is a great publication. What's going on there?
Well, the Federalist, I mean, I actually haven't written for The Federalist, but I've done, write and do a lot for a lot of different organizations, mm-hmm. groups. But I think The Federalist is doing a phenomenal job in highlighting some of these interesting and important issues out there. And I think many people should take a look and follow it. Obviously, attempting to protect that the way that our government was designed through the Constitution. I think it's important for others to take a look at.
Yeah. Very good publication. No question about that.
Yeah.
Heading on, Jim, have you heard any official statements from the President of the United States on the Roe v. Wade decision?
I have yet to hear a statement on that. I have heard many statements leading up to the formal announcement of this decision, and actually some threats from the Biden White House members and you know, some accusations. And that really brings into question their recognition that there are three co-equal branches of government.
Right.
The executive branch is not more powerful than the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court is there to ensure that our laws and our executive branch do not overreach our constitutional limits.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, with the organizations that are out there and coordinating a lot of these actions. And I do want to follow up with this entire effort that, Department of Labor, Medicare, Medicaid, HUD, Department of Education, and Department of Agriculture using child nutrition funds. Child nutrition funds, they've authorized subordinates to use that money to increase voter registration, again, for probably more than likely lower income and people that might support them in their efforts to give free things. But the people that are coordinating behind the scenes on this are very interesting. Susan Rice, former Obama, very influential Obama national security advisor, and before that the UN ambassador and a very close representative, is actually doing the coordinated effort with this. And that's why these agency heads are not responding and, of course, trying to do whatever they can to gain an advantage. And there's a tremendous amount of influence coming in from, unfortunately, BlackRock. There is new information that Epoch Times, which I do contribute to and have written for, has done a fantastic article talking about BlackRock's influence and how many times they've met with the Obama administration, and very specifically Tom Donilon, a former Obama administration advisor, strategic advisor, and official that has been providing information to the Biden administration as in his role as the chief think tank of the BlackRock investment fund, the most influential, powerful. I think they managed $13 trillion worth of assets, and they are directly involved in influencing this administration. And there's a number of people from the former Obama administration that have been involved with BlackRock that have a very easy access into the Obama administration. It makes you wonder who's actually running this administration and who's driving the train.
Yeah. Well, BlackRock has had an interesting past. There's no question about that, both positive and negative. And the comments from the Epoch Times, I think, about BlackRock and other organizations are very, very interesting. The Epoch Times is certainly one of the premier news publications in our country. Ladies and gentlemen, time for Top of the Hour News. Jimmy and I are going to be right back. Stick around.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome in, continuing the KER Economic Report, political report this weekend. Going to talk a little bit about the financial condition in the United States. We have a bit of fresh air, which started very, very slowly yesterday in terms of the... that's the best way to put it, financial conditions in the country. As of right now, with a very slow start yesterday, the Dow began to increase in value, as did the S&P, as did NASDAQ. And unfortunately for drivers, the price of oil also began to increase rather substantially. Jimmy, I'll get the exact numbers. Why don't you give a general comment?
Yeah, so right now you have this unbelievable contradiction of policy from the administration, or the regime, actually, that's saying, energy companies, you got to provide more energy. You know, it's all your fault. At the same time, and almost in the same sentence, numerous times in the same sentence, Jennifer Granholm, Secretary of Energy, mm-hmm. Joe Biden, of course, the White House spokes people, Pete Buttigieg, Secretary of Transportation. These people are actually saying, you oil companies are at fault. They've got to increase production at the same and refinery capacity. At the same time, they're saying, but we have to move on to renewables and away from this energy production of, or the production of fossils.
Yeah.
So the carbon climate mafia, which basically the climate change mafia, which has been attacking the industry and forcing change to it, which have created these gas prices and the lack of capacity in the U.S., while increasing capacity in places like China for coal-fired energy, and of course, you know, given Vladimir Putin the power of controlling, you know, gas and energy supplies into all of Eastern Europe and the EU, or Western Europe and the EU, you've got this inconsistent argument, which is, it's very hard for me to believe that people still hear that and repeat it, but you're seeing it politically repeated in numerous places. Jay Inslee in Washington saying he's not even going to abide by this tax holiday, gas tax holiday issue that's out there. But right, you know, this inconsistent in policy and procedure, how can you invest into an industry and throw billions of dollars into increasing production or drilling or refining capacity when at the same time the regulatory environment and the policy is pushing against it? And this goes right back to our comment and BlackRock. BlackRock is pushing environmental sustainable governments, ESG investing. So are Fidelity, so are many of these massive funds that control a vast amount of resources. They're directing ESG with smaller carbon footprint right now at the same time as we've got this increase in prices. And what does that mean? It means high return on their investments, revenues, and it's a manipulation, and I think a financial manipulation of the American people in order to appease corporate interests, appease political activists on the far left, but the people at the lowest end that can't afford gas are being crushed. The people that can't go, that, you know, that can't afford even to get to work anymore because of the gas. This is unbelievable that they are that inconsistent in their policies. You're seeing a lot of it behind the scenes that are coming clear right now. A lot more information that's coming out, and I think we've got to do something very clearly to stop this direction before our economy actually implodes.
I don't think there's any question about that. What I find to be interesting is the very progressive, very Democratic governor of Washington State has refused to even temporarily drop the state gas tax on gasoline. How's that for helping out Mr. and Mrs. America? Here are the numbers right now, by the way, in terms of the indices. The S&P is up about 87, 88 points. The Dow is up, I've got so much pollen in my eyes, I can't see it, over 600 points. NASDAQ is up, over 300 points. Gold, surprise, surprise, is down a bit. It's down a couple of bucks, $1.70. And crude oil, as I said earlier, is up to about $107 a barrel. Now, the interesting thing about what's going on right now is the consumer confidence numbers are continuing to plummet. I think Nancy Pelosi ought to take a look at that personally before she continues to berate what's going on in the country. Consumer confidence is a very, very good barometer about how the electorate feels about people like Pelosi, people in power. And remember that what's going on in the administrative office, which is controlled by the Democrats, and what's going on in Congress, obviously, and the House, obviously controlled by Democrats. You can thank the Democrats for the decrease in consumer confidence, and fortunately, cooler heads are prevailing today with the S&P, the Dow, and the NASDAQ continuing to increase. Comments?
Yeah. Al, you know, I mean, the markets are not actually right now a bellwether of the direction of the economy. When we have inflation rates at over, you know, producer price index at nearly 11%, when our 8.5% increase this year over year, this last report, and we haven't even seen the peak of inflation yet, because a lot of these energy prices and costs are actually not going to be felt in the initial price increases until we have the cost of transportation or distribution or actual manufacturing and energy required in production that will be carried forward in the future. So those indices right now are a little bit of influenced by large investment companies trying to make a little bit of money, because, you know, these numbers are down absolutely staggeringly in the last 3 or 4 months. When you have the S&P down over 20%, in some cases, people's, you know, 401ks are down 30 and 40%.
Yep.
And, you know, people are worried about it. They see exactly what's happening. And the thing that touches them more than anything else is their daily expenditures, what it costs for food, what it costs to drive to work, what it costs for getting their children to school. And again, these, we haven't seen the bottom, or I should say the top of the inflation scale. And of course, we're behind in trying to manage it. So this is a very difficult time for America right now.
It's a very difficult time. All I'm saying is maybe the tide slowly started to turn from an economic standpoint yesterday. It certainly hasn't turned in terms of inflation, as I can attest to, having got some groceries yesterday, and I was shocked at what it cost me to buy absolutely nothing. But the fact of the matter, the only thing I want to say is it would appear that the tide could have started to turn from an economic standpoint yesterday.
Well, I'm going to argue that, yeah, there are short-term gains that are tempting to change something in the direction. But the reality is, you're going to see a continuation of economic problems, and some of the solutions that are out there from this regime, trying to, you know, stop the gas tax, or, you know, stop the federal gas tax for a short period of time, 3 months. That's not going to go over. It's going to increase deficit. It's not going to help anything, and it likely is going to cause bigger problems down the long run, because of course it may help accelerate inflation, because you're actually creating a bigger, wider divide.
Right.
The short-term answers that they're trying to get through the November election cycle, very, very unlikely going to change the momentum and the direction of where the economy is going right now. You have not seen the implications of labor, where many, many companies, especially small businesses, are going to have to reduce workforce because they can't keep up with the cost.
Jimmy, we got to cut it. We got to cut it for a break. We'll be right back, you guys.
Yeah.
Here to wrap up KER Politics, Jim, I'd like you to continue your train of thought before we had to take a break for the commercials, and that had to do with general macro comments about the economy. Go ahead, bud.
Yeah, so, you know, what we have here, and what I was just finishing on the end of the last segment there was, you know, we haven't even seen the implications on labor costs. The way this cycle is working right now, there was a tremendous amount of money pumped into the economy, into individuals, because of the slowdown of the corona lockdowns. And Trump started that. There's no question. You know, he gave a lot of money out to people right away. And then they were trying to get people back to work in his administration. But the Biden administration continued for a long period of time, over a year, pushing the COVID lockdown agenda, keeping people out, forcing mandates on federal workers for vaccinations, firing people from economies. It was a tremendous amount of influence that on the economy. While that went forward, they pumped more money and then spent more money. Pumping that money created the inflationary cycle we have now. And then you do have problems like, you know, energy and costs that were from the, you know, Ukraine, some of the issues with the Russian invasion of Ukraine. that had minor implications, but the inflation started well before any of that happened. And
yeah.
of course, some of the, and so then, so you've got starting off with the pumping more money in, you've got increase in prices, then you're going to, you get supply chain issues, you get shortage of supplies, people aren't be able to do that. And then you've got labor, and that are right now where we have a tremendous shortage of labor, but a lot of the small businesses are not going to be able to hire people because of the increased labor costs, not having supplies. And I'm seeing it. I just have driven all up the East Coast, all the way up from South Carolina to Maine over the last week. And almost every place we went to, from Virginia up through New York and Connecticut, Maine, Pennsylvania, they are short employees. And of course, they're not going to be able to afford to increase their wages if they don't have supplies. Inflation is increasing so much. We have not seen the bottom of this, or this, I should say the top of the inflation cycle, but the bottom of very negative economic problems. And it's driven by ideologues inside Washington right now that are pushing a climate agenda.
Hmm. You know, it's really interesting what's going on right now. It's the U.S. is in a more, I would have to say, precarious position than it's ever been that I have witnessed in my lifetime. I'm just hoping that we can get out of this. I'm hoping that cooler heads will prevail. I guess we'll find out probably today and certainly this weekend. Are cooler heads going to prevail? Or is the Roe v. Wade decision going to force us into more violence in the streets? I got to tell you, when I was a kid, and I know this is true for you, Jerry, I know it's true for you, CFS, Tony, I'm sure it's true for you, Charster, etc., etc. None of us have ever experienced, I'm assuming we're all about the same age, and none of us have ever experienced the level of violence and the level of, I guess the correct word here is, animus that we see every day in major cities, at least on the West Coast in the United States. Jimmy, how about some general comments about that?
There is a tremendous amount of violence. In the 60s, there was a lot of upset. And we can look at some of the weather underground, some of the violent leftist attacks, and some of the you know, the rise of the Black Panthers, anger with police, and a lot of riot segment of the population. What we're seeing today is a very different dynamic. What we're seeing is a full-on progressively driven political party that is driving the violence much more than that 5 or 7 or 10% that maybe is on the extremes in the 60s and the early 70s. Now we've got, 30, 40% of an aggressive, progressive Democratic Party that's taking actions with, the George Floyd riots, with Antifa, with BLM, and of course now with Roe v. Wade. That's unlike anything that we've had since really, with that big of a divide in our population, and it's being driven by political agendas trying to gain more power. And of course, the other side, the left, will say, "Oh no, it's the right, authoritarianism, and trying to dictate what's going to happen to your future." And I think those are very inconsistent arguments. But the real problem is most people do not understand. Most Americans have not been educated in the impact of a centralized control system. They don't understand anymore how damaging the former Soviet system was, how damaging communism was in China and Mao's regime or Cambodia or Vietnam in those early years. What we're seeing now is actually an acceptance and a tolerance for that type of look to a great leader and then alienate the opposition to extreme, and that's creating a tremendous divide in America right now.
Well, there's no question about that. It's interesting when you take a look at what's going on in China, which has obviously a very different political system than we do, with the strength that China is gaining in the world. You have to give them a little bit of credit, because China, in my opinion, has become, without a doubt, but arguably probably the strongest nation in the world today. And I think if they had perhaps more nuclear power, it wouldn't, that probably word wouldn't even be in there. What are your comments, Jimmy?
Well, they haven't quite reached economic parity with the United States or the EU, but they will soon if we continue down this rate of growth and submission to their policies. Mm-hmm. There is a big counterweight out there, and that's India. I just watched an interesting video today watching about the growth of India, and it's something that the Trump administration understood very well. That's a, you know, sizable economy, very powerful military, very powerful a democratic system. It's challenged, but it's a democratic system. Somewhere that the West needs to find a way to align a little bit more directly with to avoid the China power. But what we're seeing is corporate influence that is willing to sell out basic principles of our Constitution, individual rights, in order to achieve financial gains by staying involved in China. And that's because they've invested so heavily on in manufacturing, in data transfer, in the institutions in that system. And unfortunately, that's the problem right now when we have no one at the helm, really nobody, no individual at the helm of the United States. You've got a very problematic leader that is really having has to be told exactly when to sit down and how to speak, as right. The data showed yesterday from picture, but there's no script cards of what to do when talking to people.
Well, who'd have thought?
And I'm talking about Joe Biden.
I understand. Who'd have thought is really about all I can say. You know, to wrap up the economic discussion, which I think is very important right now because it is an excellent thermometer about what's going on in the United States, certainly not a good thermometer dealing with the unrest that we may very well see this weekend. But in terms of quality of life in the United States, the economic barometer really is, in my opinion, the number one indicator. You look at the fact that housing prices are going to begin to go down, and I'd like to leave listeners with one specific thought, and that is if the bank account called equity goes away, what is that going to do to the U.S. economy? Pardon me, I'd like you guys to think about that. Equity is giving people an awful lot of comfort because many people have hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in equity, which I call funny money. How do you think if that goes away, that would affect the general feeling of well-being in the United States? We've got a minute left, Jim. Not even that.
Yeah. If you can't afford to buy a house because the rates of mortgages, and if you are losing your job because of, you know, the high costs of labor and the low production that will result in these supply chain issues, it's fairly problematic. And again, the people that are going to suffer most are the people on the lowest end of the spectrum. Yeah. Just because you got $1 million, maybe you're not as worried about it if you got $1 million in equity in your home. But if you are on the margins and you're living month to month, which is actually a very sizable set of the population, we're in deep trouble. And that's why you're seeing these indicators of concern.
We're in huge trouble when that $1 million goes away. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. We enjoyed putting it together.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.